Cat Context, episode 43 for January, Wednesday the 22nd. That was slightly out of order, but just like look at a calendar and figure it out. The 22nd of 2014, we are here for our second show of the new year. We have a couple of topics today. Aralade, who invested in a little Kickstarter for a little game called Broken Age, is here to tell us all about it. And as well, we're going to talk about backlogs. Backlogs are really hot this year for some reason. I've seen a lot of them across the blogs. And so we're going to talk about why we have a backlog. Are we buying too many games? What are we playing right now? Yada, yada, yada. But first, let's go to the guests. It's Aralade and Elindriel. Hey, Ellie, are you the magic king of the world?
Sadly not. I did do really well. I won my last chance trial event on Friday night. So I played 5 rounds in a row and won all of them. And that got me upgraded to a VIP for the weekend, which is awesome. And it got me buys, which I didn't have. And it won me a box of Magic cards. And yeah, it was good. And then I was in the final round. I was playing to get into day 2, and I lost. My deck didn't have the legs that it had had the rest of the day. So that's all right. I got to sit next to Josh Hunter Layton in that last table, who's a famous Magic pro. For those of you who know who famous Magic pros are, and he seemed like a really cool guy, which was nice.
Well, sounds like you did pretty well then.
I felt like I did very well for going to my second major tournament.
Arrow, how was your weekend?
My weekend has been great, other than the tragedy of bedtime being incredibly tragic today.
Oh no.
I don't know if y'all can hear it, but there's some fussing still going on outside my my hermetically sealed podcast doors. She tried to say that since she'd been in bed, obviously it's a new day now because she just got up.
That sounds like
I think that was pretty impressive logic for a 3-year-old.
That's the kind of thing I always try to justify to myself in college, right?
As long as you lay down in bed, a new day starts.
That's right. Well, like, the day doesn't end until you go to bed, so it doesn't count.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I totally, yeah, I had those moments in college. Well, awesome. I also had a good weekend, did some traveling, saw some family who gave a shot watching the podcast, but said that it was very confusing and they didn't understand anything we were talking about. So
I'm sorry I swear so much, Lior's family.
Sorry. I will pass that along. Who is that sweary lady? Well, today we have a couple of topics. First up is Broken Age, which of course is Double Fine's new game, which was released to Kickstarter backers. Is it? It's not out yet for us non-Kickstarter backers, I think.
No, it is on pre-order. You can pre-order it on Steam if you are not a backer.
It's like another... It was 2 weeks, I think, was the head start time or something like that. So the rest of us public people will be able to get it in a week and a half or something.
You schlubs who didn't give them money already.
Yeah, well.
You people with no hope or faith or joy.
Arrow, over to Arrow. Tell us about Broken Age.
For those of you unfamiliar, which is probably just, I think, maybe you guys, Broken Age was kickstarted as a... Tim Schafer wanted to make another point-and-click adventure game. He hadn't made one since, I think, Grim Fandango was the last one he made, which is one of the greatest games of all time. He was also responsible for Full Throttle, which is on my top 5 all-time games list. That kind of LucasArts style, you walking around rooms, picking up stuff, those kinds of point-and-click puzzle adventures. And the Kickstarter exploded, as we all know, and they made $1 billion, so now... finally, the game is out. It took a lot longer than they had first expected in the Kickstarter because they had only asked for something like $400,000, not very much at all. And then when they got $3.5 million, the scope increased exponentially, which meant development time also increased. And it has been so totally worth the wait. It is spectacularly beautiful. Which is the first thing I need to say. Seriously, just every frame is a visual delight. It's the prettiest game I've ever played, and I've played Okami. It's designed to look like a storybook, so instead of, like, very sharply delineated animation, it's all very watercolory. It's painted. It's just it's spectacular looking. It looks like the best of my collection of children's books.
And how's the play?
That's interesting, because since they got one of the stretch goals was to release it for tablets and smartphones, I think, also. So they kind of dumbed down the interface. There's a little bit of clunkiness when you go to use something in the inventory, because it's, rather than making an entirely different engine for the iPad, they just make it so you only need one click and drag. And that takes a little getting used to, and that's a little clumsy, and I'm disappointed about that, but it's something that's also easily fixed. And instead of having multiple verbs, like a 90s style point and click adventure did, you will instead, you single click on items in your inventory to go through the look at, I'm making air quotes right now, which you would know if I had a camera, the look at that you would get in an adventure game. And the story is, I mean, it's just really, it's really great, and everyone should play it. And there's a separate undercurrent of, like, pride and ownership that I have playing this game, because another of the stretch goals was voice acting. And so every time Jennifer Hale shows up, I was like, yes, I did that! My 30 bucks! Totally, yes, I helped pay your salary! And it really shows how much goodwill Tim Schafer and also the genre has throughout the industry, because, like, Elijah Wood is the male lead, but he did it for scale because he was a backer.
Wow!
And he asked to be involved. So there's,
that's actually really cool.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the people involved in this, from the voice down to artwork, are people who contacted Double Fine and worked for pennies because they wanted to be a part of this.
Wow, that's really neat.
That's an interesting thing about Kickstarter for me, is that so now there are these, 90,000 people who are all shareholders in this game. Some of them are kind of whiny about it, but...
I was going to say, shareholders leads us down a dangerous path, I think, but I know...
Well, there are some people who are complaining that it's not exactly what they wanted, because I guess they threw their 15 bucks in and they expected it to be another, Grim Fandango or Day of the Tentacle. And instead of it looking like, 64 color, 90s cell shaded, many verb adventure, it's this beautiful, artistically stunning storybook. And there were people who were actually complaining about that it didn't look like a 90s game. Seriously? It's been 20 years. Really? You want to go back to that?
Obviously they do, since basically every game coming out these days is some version of retro. Well, not really, but like thousands of games are coming out that way.
And it's a retro style play, just because no one makes point and click adventures anymore. But it doesn't. Lots of indie studios are bringing it back up.
Yeah, I think they're the indie guys behind Been There, Dan That, and Time Gentlemen Please were getting kind of testy earlier in the week, because everyone's like, this is the first adventure game in forever. And they're like, hello, we're indie developers who make point-and-click adventure games. So just please pay attention to us. So, but yeah, no, it's true. There hasn't been like a big-name point-and-click adventure game.
Right,
in a
while. Except for The Walking Dead.
I don't consider that a point-and-click adventure.
How is that not a point-and-click adventure?
No, that's more like... It's more like Dragon's Lair,
isn't that also a point-and-click adventure?
It certainly is not. That is a quick-time event playthrough. That's like you're calling Heavy Rain a point-and-click adventure. It's not.
Heavy Rain would be a point-and-click adventure.
No, it's not.
Sure it is.
No,
it's still an adventure
not.
Game.
But it's not the same. It's not. You can't play Heavy Rain or Dragon's Lair and then play The Dig and... they're not the same at all.
I mean, like, it's not like I have a bag full of, like, toothpicks and bubble gum and paper clips and, like, made a fishing pole out of it. Spoiler for whatever that game was that did that.
Yeah, that's part of a point-and-click adventure, is it's gathering stuff,
no,
putting
you're
it together.
Still but you're still looking around for the interactive things and...
No, going. it's not the same. It's just not.
Inventory does seem like a crucial part of the...
Yeah, inventory is the big hallmark of that genre. And you know, interacting versus looking versus that kind of manipulating other objects... It's not just walking around and clicking on the interactive piece. It's taking stuff from room to room, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I get that there is a difference for sure, but I still think that those types of games are at least close cousins.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I would consider all of those as still to be adventure games, but one's like... One's more puzzly, I guess, than the other, but...
Yes.
That is fair.
Yeah. No, I'm not denying that they're all adventure games, but the point and click adventure is a very specific niche beast.
The lead character in Broken Age is a woman of color. A girl of color?
In fact, there are two. It's two stories that you can flip between. One of them is Shay, who's Elijah Wood, who is trapped in a Playmobil spaceship. I mean, actually having toddlers in the house, and that's someone, whoever set up the storyboard for Shay's world knows what kids' toys do and how obnoxious they are. And he's apparently been stuck there since he was born. And, you know, it's all about trying to grow up and get out of his Tinker Toy playpen. And then there's Vella, who is... not only is she a woman of color, she also has got a tomboy build, which is so pleasantly surprising. And honestly, I was talking to another friend about this, who said the difference between the Kickstarter funding and going through a major publisher is that Vella would not exist in her current form if they had gone through a major publisher. And I think that is probably very true.
That's really cool. This sounds definitely like a game up my alley. And so, is it sort of like, I'm thinking like Monkey Island kind of
Monkey Island is a point-and-click adventure. Exactly right. Go you. I gave you a thumbs up just then, which you would know if I had a camera.
We need to work on some sort of like hand motion camera for you, so it's the airports. The thumbs up. Yes, that's really cool, and that's totally my kind of game too. I like those ones where, you know, you're not under a lot of pressure to move quickly.
No, it's all about going slowly and looking at everything, and, you know, talking about everything, and just it's so great. And also, no spoilers. If you do play it, you can switch back and forth between the characters, but finish Shay's first.
So have you finished the game?
They split the game in two. This is Act 1. I think the second part is coming out this summer. Part of the... Tim Schafer is notorious for making about 50% more game than he needs to. And in this case, rather than cut out things that he thought were important, the company made the decision to split the game. So Part 2 will be released, I think, this summer. And if you buy Part 1, you automatically get Part 2.
And about how long would you say Part 1 was?
Oh, it took me about 6 or 7 hours, but keep in mind that there was a lot of pausing for toddlery in there. She also enjoys exploring.
That's cute.
So, yeah.
How do you feel the Kickstarter influenced it outside of, you know, the character choices? Like, one of the things that I heard about this game in particular was that it sort of showed a lot of the negatives of the Kickstarter process in general based on scope creep, right? Like, they fell victim to the stretch goal after stretch goal after stretch goal, and everything's like, we're going to make this, like, 100 times longer, and we're going to put it on every platform ever, and we're going to, like, you know, make magic happen that is clearly not feasible.
I think honestly what the Kickstarter did was bring that into the limelight rather than create it necessarily. I guess being in software development myself, that scope creep in every project happens. It's just usually the end user doesn't know about it, and they don't know why the delays are happening.
Right.
But part of the reason for the Kickstarter and was because they wanted to do this documentary film about how to make a game, or how they make a game.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't even start with anything until the documentarians were ready to go, because they wanted to go from point zero to release in this documentary.
Right.
So people got to see, or had to see, like having to make tough decisions, like cutting out important parts of the game, scope creep, extending the timelines, that kind of thing. So it brought up the awareness.
Did you watch those documentaries as they were going on?
I started in the beginning, but then I realized that I wanted the game to be a surprise, so I'm going to go back and watch them all later, since I was on the backer level that I will get the HD downloads.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I heard on another podcast that they actually have done a pretty good job about it, and I was about showing off progress and even gameplay and stuff without spoiling anything story related.
Yeah, they had they fuzzed things out. They had spoiler bars on the screens and stuff when they were showing development, but that this is my favorite genre, and I was really looking forward to the game, so I've just put the documentary on hold.
I totally get that. Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things with that I've heard from other people who have done Kickstarters and talked about their success or failure of their Kickstarters projects, you know, and where they would change things if they went back. And one of them, for sure, is to make stretch goals that don't increase the size of the project exponentially.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people sort of learned that from the Double Fine Adventure, honestly.
Yeah, they had to make an entirely new engine.
That's
good. Because of the Kickstarter goal, right?
Right, to put it on as many different platforms as possible, and to add voice and more animation.
Yeah.
Because there was just going to be one artist whose style this is. And then they had to hire an entire team to kind of ape his artistic direction.
Right. Which is of course the problem with Kickstarter putting a date on the project release from the beginning, essentially, right?
I would say so, yeah.
This is kind of reminding me of the Kickstarter that came out this week by Brad McQuaid, who's behind Vanguard and EverQuest, for his hopefully will exist new MMO Pantheon Rise of the Fallen. Because you're talking about stretch goals, and I just had to look to confirm, but his stretch goals at things for, like, if he makes 2.5 million, his stretch goal is crafting.
Huh.
If he makes 3 million, he'll add player housing. Like, those seem like some pretty significant. At 1.6 million, he'll add mods.
I don't really think kickstarting an MMO is possibly wise, really, or feasible in any possible way.
I actually agree with you, but why do you think that?
Because $3 million does not sound like MMO kind of money. I mean, like, Star Wars was, what, $120 million?
Yeah, but something. Star Wars is a different sort of MMO than, like, an indie-ish MMO, right?
Okay, see, I don't have any concept of what an indie MMO would be. I'm just thinking about, you know, all of the work you have to do to make sure no one person will destroy it for everyone else.
Well, one, that's going to happen regardless.
Yeah, but you can mitigate that some.
I think the problem with an MMO as a Kickstarter is MMOs require significant ongoing finances to do servers and stuff, and that doesn't really suit a Kickstarter. I would love to see, like, small MMOs take off.
But you're still kickstarting the initial development. So, I mean, you know, before you can even run the game and worry about how to pay for ongoing server support, I mean, you have to have upfront development costs. And I think that the if Kickstarter serves a purpose in that sort of world, it's, I mean, it's clearly that. And I mean, maybe they've budgeted server things, or maybe one of the stretch goals will be, you know, 1 year of server support. Who knows?
Well, yeah, with an MMO, ooh, you need not just the game development, but also the infrastructure development.
That's very true. I see at 3.8 million, their stretch goal is PvP.
Wow.
I feel like this is doing stretch goals wrong.
Thanks for having crafting before PvP, though. That's pretty sweet.
Well, each like 200,000 over a million is a class. So, you know, either, I don't know. This sort of, I'm just scanning it right now. And it sort of looks like the sort of classic way to get money and break your ability to deliver on it.
Right, exactly. That's why I thought of it, because you were saying, you know, keeping your stretch goals reasonable and saying, like, we'll add a new race as a stretch goal or an adventure area does not really seem so. Zones. So your stretch goals are races and zones and classes and crafting.
Right.
You know, what exactly am I getting for my initial 800,000?
It's probably in there.
Yeah, I'm sure. But apparently it doesn't involve gnomes, so whatever. I read something just the other day, and I wish I could remember the exact number. It was something like 30% so far of game-related Kickstarters have actually come through.
That seems high.
It's not a lot.
No, honestly, that seems high to me.
I know. I personally have funded 3 game-related Kickstarters, and my first one will launch on January 28th.
Which one was that?
That's Broken Age.
Oh, okay. Right.
But,
well, that was a good first one.
I also supported Jane Jensen's Mobius and Hero U, which is the spiritual successor to Quest for Glory.
Yeah, and I think there really is value to Kickstarter for indie games. I think there's some value to that. I think MMOs are kind of a little ishy. I think a lot of times Kickstarters now are more like for self-promotion. Therefore, as a promotional vehicle, more than like getting the funding, which I think is unfortunate.
Yeah, I agree with that. I am a backer. My household is a backer of Dreamfall Chapters. So whenever that one comes out, which is supposed to be this year theoretically, then I will have been delivered a video game Kickstarter.
Well, speaking of games and mini games and games that are all over the place, what do you mean
Nope.
You're just going to nope that?
Yeah, that was a terrible transition. You had a great opportunity with, like, so this is going to come out and be available to the public next week. Are you going to buy it? And if you buy it, are you going to play it, or is it just going to go in the pile of unplayed games?
Well, why don't you answer your question, Ellie?
I don't think I will buy it right away. I will definitely put it on my list of games to purchase and play at some point. But I went through my Steam catalog the other day, last week, and counted up the number of games that I own but have not played or not finished. And it's over 80. It's like in the 85 range out of about 180 games. And that is a frustrating experience. to go look at it. And you know, it's definitely true that some of those are throw-ins and some of those are whatever, but, you know, I have a very sizable backlog, as I'm sure we all do, and most people that are listening to the podcast also do. So we are starting a project to finish them, at least I am, and I made Lior sign up. So, Arrow, you can join too, and it'll be awesome. And my plan is to try and finish at least a game a month or so out of my backlog. Some of them are long, some of them are short. And I'm just going to try and get through them. That's my plan. What's yours? That was pretty bad too, see?
Yeah, that was pretty bad too, yeah. I am also working on backlog. I see, there seems to be a thing. I mean, we kind of struck upon this organically in January, but I see a lot of this around, and I think it's sort of, last year was the first time I started seeing people really say, there's a Steam sale, but I've already bought everything. or, you know, I bought nothing during this Steam sale, blah, blah, blah. And as opposed to the previous years, it was like, oh my God, I bought all the games. And I think we're at that natural point where the sales have been for so many years and have such good deals that people have these huge backlogs and they realize I need to stop shoveling games into my Steam list that I don't ever play. I think that might be, I have a feeling there might be a bit of a trend going on here that people are going to start playing their backlogs, which is cool. I have a ton of games just looking through, and particularly for me, my feeling is I have a ton of games that I've played about 2 hours of and then have not finished or picked up again, even though I enjoyed them. Because I'm just like, that was good! Next! New novelty! Next one! Move along!
I think that's kind of fair. I mean, that's kind of fair, though, right? Like, I think it's reasonable to consider a game complete or whatever after X amount of hours in it. If it's not gripping you and you don't want to finish it, then I think that that is a valid complete state.
Well, that's a good question. What is a complete game? Era, what do you consider a game that you have completed?
When I'm done with it.
That's right.
That's very vague. That's very vague.
Well, it depends on the game.
It has to be vague, right?
It does depend on the game. You're right.
There are some games that I will never be done with because I want to go back and I want to do, you know, play different choices, make different decisions, that kind of different classes, go different ways. There are other games that I've played 10, 15 minutes of and have discovered they weren't for me. Thanks for being $3.99 on Steam sale.
Or thrown in with the Humble Bundle that I bought.
Or thrown in with the Humble Bundle, yeah.
I mean,
there's a lot of things.
I did look at a lot of those 80-plus games on my, you know, sort of quote-unquote backlog list, and a lot of those games are games that I never really had any intention to play, but, like, came along with a Humble Bundle or a pack or something, right? So...
Do you feel, now that you have looked and you have counted how many games you have and you see them in a list, because I've seen the list, do you feel that you are still going to buy games? I mean, you said, like, you're going to put Broken Age on your to-buy list. Are you kind of, you know, I mean, is there any possible way you can ever play all these games that you have? Should you just give up?
No, hell yeah, I'm going to get through them all. You got to be an optimist about this stuff, and I'm going to keep buying games. What I think that I'm not going to do is I'm going to try not to buy a game just because it's on sale. These sales roll around so often. The discounts, the deep discounts on games are newly consistent, right? I mean, like, going into any of these Steam sales, you can pretty much guess at which of the major games are going to be on sale, and it's all of them. I mean, it is. And even the ones that aren't front page deal of the day sort of deals or flash sales, they're, like, almost everything is, like, 33 to 50% off. So anytime I want to buy... You know, like before, in previous Steam sales, I would have bought Saints Row 4. I am not ready to play Saints Row 4 at all. Like, I don't need another open world game in my list of games. I never played Saints Row 3, and I want to. So I will play Saints Row 3, and then I will buy Saints Row 4. But until then, it's going to be on my wish list. And I'm going to start using my wish list more. There are games that I will want to play during the Zeitgeist, and which is totally important. And a reasonable reason to want to buy and play games. I think actually Broken Age may end up being that way. But, you know, even though I said I'm probably not going to buy it, just because
you're already
I know. But I'm tired, so, like, it's fine. My willpower is low.
All right.
But, like, I mean, I it's the sort of game that, like, people will be talking about because it is. I don't want to call it important. I don't know if that is an appropriate word or not. But, like, it's sort of
notable,
exactly, right? So there's going to be conversation around it, and I want to be a part of that conversation. So if I'm in a position with, you know, the rest of my games and it's still relevant, then I will do it. Otherwise, I'll wait.
Well, I think you could argue that Broken Age specifically is important because it was that Kickstarter that showed the industry that crowdfunding could work, theoretically. I think that's fascinating. And also, it's a really good game and everyone should play it.
Yeah, well, that's
Yeah, no, I would totally agree with that. I, you know, looking at my backlog, it really, I mean, I sort of stopped, I did not buy games on sale for, like, the last half of last year, just sort of waiting for the Christmas sale, at which point I loaded up. But I feel like maybe I need to take a step back from buying games and do, like you said, Ellie, you know, I mean, because prices, they just drop like a stone. So if I don't think I'm going to play it before the next, you know, quarter year Steam sale or whatever, don't buy it because it's just going to get cheaper.
I mean,
it's a waste of my money.
And there it is. I still think there are legitimate reasons to buy games at release. I mean, it's totally reasonable to want to give studios full price money, right? In a way that makes them feel successful or be successful or actually be successful.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's fine. And sometimes I'm willing to actually give the money for that reason. But yeah, just not everyone.
I cannot possibly play every single game the day it comes out.
And not every game that, yeah. And not even just every game that I want to play, right?
Right.
No, it's true. There's a lot of games, I could play. Looking at my list, I really need to focus and actually get through a game, because there's a lot of games that I like, but I just don't... I mean, not even get through, even get halfway through. I play it, and then I just sort of move on to the next shiny, and even if I enjoy it. And I really need to take the time to savor and enjoy my games if I like them, and push on and get to the end. Because I have so many games now, if I sort of run into even the tiniest roadblock, I'm like, you know... Move to the next game, whatever. This game doesn't need to stop me. So I that is sort of what I am taking away from this whole backlog thing. And I am slowly pushing through. In fact, I'm working on stacking right now, which is another Double Fine.
It's so cute.
Cute. It's so cute.
I love stacking. Oh my God, it's adorable.
It is. I'm really glad. It's relatively short, so it's a good one to sort of knock off the list. And yeah, it's really, really cute.
Yeah, that's like, I have Bastion on my... shortlist. That's the next one I'm going to move on to because it's relatively
Bastion is
short.
Spectacular.
And
play it with a controller.
I of course will play it with a controller.
Okay.
I have a ton of games like that, right? Like all these cool indie games that have come out over the last few years, which is great for all sorts of reasons, but terrible for my backlog.
MMOs are terrible for backlog.
MMOs are the worst for backlog.
Yeah.
I say all the... I'm like, this backlog, and I'm going to knock off one a month, and then WildStar is going to come out, and then... We'll see. We'll see how many I actually get through on my backlog.
I know. Well, that's why I actually think doing something like a group project is a good idea. I think in general, like, having a group of people that you're all doing something like this with, it's kind of like weight loss or, you know, fitness or... basically anything. It's like a support group going and you're like, hey, let's all do this together. So there you go.
I tell you what, if I could play my backlog on the treadmill, both backlogging and treadmilling would happen more often.
Yeah. See, you guys got to get more games to re-release themselves on iOS or something so that you can like go... Or get one of those shields. Get an NVIDIA shield and then just stream everything.
It's true, you know, public shaming it actually has worked really well. Knowing that you and Core and other people are looking at my backlog list is definitely making me play through them more than I possibly would if I was just trying to motivate myself to do it. Yeah, so if you want to play through your backlog, get your friends to shame you.
And I want to like, click that complete button, right? And then I can move on to the next game, and it's awesome. It'll be awesome.
So basically, we're playing through our backlog because we've gamified playing through the backlog.
Okay. Jesus Christ.
We have made a game out of it that we must complete to complete the games.
I don't have a problem with that. This is one instance where gamification is okay. Like, gamifying games is not a big deal. I just, like, all I need to do is, like, come up with a whole bunch of achievements for each, like, you know, for your game list. And then we'll have a multi-million-dollar idea.
There we go. That's all we need is achievements, yeah, to get achievements. Meta-achievements. Oh, this has potential. How many Steam achievements do you have?
I'm also trying to set reasonable goals for any given game, right? So, like, I don't want... I mean, like Arrow said, you're done with a game when you're done with it. Like, for me, that's generally going to be when I'm done with the single-player campaign. Even on, like... games that have multiplayer components that I want to play.
I'm not going to capture all the flags, Altair. Stop asking.
I finished finished one game that way, and then an expansion, like a DLC came out for it, and I didn't knock her because of the expansion.
It's not done. You better go back and get on that.
I know. Oh, it sucks so much. I spent so much effort getting 100% through them.
It's true, and I have a lot of games that I just accidentally got in bundles. That, I mean, I don't know, I'm looking at my list, I don't even know what they are, much less if I will enjoy them, so I'm not worried too much. The problem, I need to stop buying bundles, that's really the thing, because you get all these games, and I'm never going to play half of
bundles
them.
Bundles are fine, just don't add the extra ones to your backlog list, right? Like, that's the other thing, is, like, the Steam list shows everything, not just the games you care about.
It's very zen.
I mean, if you have enough hard drives, you can just install all the games you care about and then uninstall the ones you don't care about and then make it show only installed games. But that's a lot of effort.
All right, so we are going to wrap up this show pretty short, but I have one quick final topic to ask you guys because it's sort of a hot thing right now. Bashyok said that we get 90s when we pre-order Warlords of Draenor, not necessarily when we actually start Warlords of Draenor, and that people might be able to buy extra Insta 90s. Insta leveling to 90, is it the end of the world? Because if you look at Twitter, it is, and I am not so sure.
No.
I mean, how long did it take to get to 90 before?
Oh, like, my God.
It takes a while.
Like 10 hours, maybe?
Not even. I got to 90. I didn't even set foot in Pandaria until I was, like, level 89. Because I did all the pet quest stuff first.
Yeah, but yeah, and even if you don't go that route, if you get a full set of heirlooms and are in a guild, like...
Yeah, it's nothing.
And on top of that, you can refer a friend to get 290s at the same time.
Do you think Insta 90s encourages people to not know how to play their class? I think that's really the big concern.
I think the leveling speed and many, many other things contribute way more than the fact that you can just be level 90.
I think people need to spend a whole lot less time being the fun police.
Nope.
Ellie's like, no, I'm not giving up my fun police badge, man.
No, I mean, honestly, I agree. Like, who gives a shit if, like, somebody has a level 90, whatever.
Oh my God, someone's having fun in a way that's unapproved. Stop!
I agree. I think it's we're really at the point now, particularly with Warcraft coming up with level 100, it's totally ludicrous to expect the game to have players rejoin it, or heaven forbid, new players, and be like, that's cool, now level to 90. Particularly in a game like Warcraft where there's no mentoring or anything like that. Trying to encourage people to come back from after Burning Crusade or whatever and be like, you know, now you just have to level up 40 levels and we can play together.
I still think they should cut the entire leveling experience out of Warcraft. Because they're doing everything they can to do it anyway. Except maybe for the last expansion. Absolutely. Don't make that face. Like, how much extra experience do you get, like, just by making a character? Like, rest experience is completely ridiculous. If you join a guild, it's stupid. If you run an instance, you can't do the quests.
I don't necessarily disagree with you, but you can't really... Perhaps designing a new game where there's no leveling experience...
Well, they can just cut out all of the previous expansion's leveling experience and then...
What? There's all that content! What are you going to do with all that content, man?
It's not like people are reading the content now anyway, which is super distressing.
You can leave it all there. Who gives a shit? Like, you leave it all there and, like, every character you create after the next one comes out has a little checkbox. Do you want to start at, you know, the beginning of this expansion? And then you just say yes or no. I mean... Like, there's basically no point in making a new character level from 1 to 90 when we're going to level 100. And for the first character on account, going from 90 to 100 makes some sense, I guess. Only because they need more time before the next raid is ready, essentially, for the vast majority of people.
Well, I think there's story, too. I mean, particularly Wrath. You know, leveling to level cap and Wrath, you definitely followed a storyline,
and
they were able to kind of make that pay off later on.
People hated the leveling content.
Who hated leveling Wrath?
I loved
it. Leveling Wrath, and I hate leveling.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like the phasing and all of that was a pain in the ass for people.
Yep.
I thought Leveling Wrath was cool.
It was probably the best leveling content. Story-wise, I totally agree. It was awesome. I love leveling. Even now, I want to take off all my heirlooms, never get rested experience, and not be in a guild just so I can go see the stories. Like, even though I've done them a bunch of times, I want to go through that. I like doing it. I just don't think that I'm in the majority.
Yeah, I mean, I am leveling a bunk right now, and I've got all the guild benefits and all the heirlooms and all the rest
and
of your XP.
And you're a monk. Are you a panda, too?
And I'm a panda
so
monk.
So there's, like, extra,
yes.
There's extra experience. Are you doing the monk 100% daily quest?
50%, but yes. Yes, I am.
Do you send
yes.
yourself any of those 300% files from Time Loot Isle?
No, I didn't even know there was such a thing, but I'm going to do that now. Because I don't like leveling, except for the first time I go through an expansion. Then I do. So I sort of feel like you need, if you have one character at 90, you should be able to pay to have as many characters
to
90 as
you
want to pay for.
That was one nice thing about Star Wars with the legacy perks. Once you got leveled up, you only had to do a bunch of stuff once. You could get bonuses and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, why should you have to pay? And why should you have to go through rep for all of your extra characters? And why should you have to do all that shit? I mean, everything else
Well,
is
you have to pay because Blizzard likes you to pay for things.
And it actually costs them, like, $50 for me to transfer my character from one to the other, right? From one server
no.
to the other.
No. No, it costs, like, 3 cents of computing power. It's like buying popcorn at the movie theater where, you know, it's like 2 pennies of popcorn.
It's not even real popcorn.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree with you, but, you know, that horse is out of the barn. It's gone. You're going to have to pay.
And we're probably going to have to pay 50 or 60 bucks.
No, you think?
Yeah.
What? How much would you pay to level a character to 90 insta-level?
Zero.
Really?
Yeah.
That's true, because you like leveling. Arrow, how much would you pay? Forget Ellie.
I don't know.
$10 maybe.
I would maybe pay 20.
That's what I think. 20. 20 is about the most I would do. Blizzard, 1999.
They can't make it 20 or you would never transfer a character again.
What?
Or faction change. It can't be cheaper than a faction change in a transfer, which is $55.
Not necessarily, because if you hate leveling enough, there's still 10 levels that you'd need to go. Right?
You could get a slight discount. Maybe it'll be 45.
And also, you're not getting professions or anything if you're insta 90. So you would still faction change if you didn't want to, God forbid, level tailoring again. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, or if you have a lot of reputations, for example.
Right.
Then you would pay for the transfer and not just level up. Because those are still per character, as far as I know, right? Right? Are those still characters?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, but they don't matter behind after expansion. They don't matter.
You shut your mouth, they don't matter.
No, because you get the... Don't you get credit on for, like, all the faction achievements and stuff on whatever character? What do they all have to be on a single character?
Well, you could, like, wear your beloved title on whoever you want, but still, I mean, they matter to me.
I think the actual achievements might be character-bound. I'm kind of... The line between account-bound and character-bound achievements, it's a little confusing. I'm sorry.
And you, like, get the achievement again anyway, which is really weird.
Yeah, it's a little confusing. But, you know, a lot of people they're really, really mad at the idea of Insta 90s, and I think it's a... Sure, why not? Why not?
I don't love it, but, you know, I feel like it's a foreground conclusion.
Right. Like, you would not do it for yourself, but you don't mind if someone
you
else
You say
doesn't.
I wouldn't do it for myself. I'm going to end up doing it.
I know, and then we're going to laugh at you on the podcast.
I've read every other stupid-ass thing that Blizzard has made, including Pandaria.
I wasn't going to say anything, because it would have been more fun if we had just mentioned that later when you actually buy the level 90.
Nope. I'll admit it.
But no, I just don't see it's a huge deal. Cyril wrote a blog post this week about how the last barrier is buying a class change. And that is, and you know, for some reason, the class change, for no good reason, kind of sticks in my craw a bit. I'm like, well, you can't just pay to change class. And I don't know why I'm okay with Insta 90s, but Insta class changes makes me feel weird.
But an Insta 90 is basically an Insta class change.
No, it's not. It's not because you lose all the character-based achievements and bank and all that shit. I mean, I don't particularly like race changes, although I've race changed before. Like, it takes all of the R out of RPG, or RP out of RPG.
I would disagree with you because, I mean, if your character concept doesn't fit the race that you have, but then I think about these things a lot.
No, if your character concept doesn't fit the race, how do you let it get that far?
That's true.
I mean, like, you build your character concept before you make the character, right?
The problem with that is that they keep adding newer and cooler races into the game.
That doesn't matter.
So,
your
like,
character is still your character. I mean, if you're a role player, that character
right.
does his or her story arc. Is his or her story arc. That's the story arc. When it's
right.
time for you, the player, to play a new character and you want to play a goblin, like, just dropping in a goblin into the world... I mean, like, dropping a goblin into the world can work fine. I mean, it can. Like, it sucks. It always sucked in Warcraft that, like, you know, day one, I can't have a backstory where I'm not, like, a shitty peasant who can't kill a boar. Right?
Yeah.
And, like, day three, I'm, like, killing Ragnaros. Like, there's, like, it moves at a pace that's not really conducive to role-playing.
Right.
I think there is a happy medium here, though.
Yeah, there is.
yeah. I don't know. I mean, for race changes, I'm not much of an RPer, though. So I can't really speak from that perspective. But, you know, starting out as a night elf and then having cooler races come out, and I'm like, darn right, I'm switching to cooler race. With better animations, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, I switched my elf to a worgen, because hell yeah.
All right, well, that's it for today's show.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Hooray! Thank you for watching and or listening. You can find us at liorblog.com, liorblog.com, and click on Cat Context Podcast in the main menu. We are on iTunes, we are on Stitcher, we are on YouTube, we are everywhere. We love your comments and questions, so email us at podcast@liorblog.com, or we are on Twitter at Cat Context Podcast. Or you can contact us. I am Liores, Liores on Twitter. Ellie is That Angry Dwarf on Twitter. Aralade is, surprisingly, Aralade on Twitter. You can follow us there, in which we will say things about lunch. That's just me. I say things about lunch. You know, lunch, things that irritate me. There's a bug, you know, so follow me.
It's Twitter. Fascinating. It's Twitter. It's hilarious.
It's Twitter. And that is it. We'll be back in 2 weeks with more news. Maybe we'll talk about Boobgate in a couple weeks, maybe.
Maybe. We'll see what is revealed and or happens between now.
Or not revealed, as the case may be.
Or not
revealed. Oh, or not revealed. You ladies, stay away from my boobs.
That's still the best thing I've ever heard in my life.
That's just so wrong in so many ways. Anyway, until then, thanks for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Have fun and keep on playing. Bye!
Bye.